The car was a large BMW. The rear door swung open as Mayanna and Able Team stepped out of the hotel. They climbed in, Blancanales pulling the door shut as the car began to move. It swept around to the street and eased into the traffic. Headlights on against the torrential rain. The windshield wipers were working hard to keep the glass clear. The Chinese man seated beside the driver turned to face May and Able Team. He reached out to shake their hands.
I'm Tony Chan. We have much to thank your people for. Anna is important to us, very.
Tony, you are embarrassing me.
Mayanna embarrassed? Never.
An honor to meet you, Tony. Please, tell us what you know.
Okay. As far as we can make out, Kim Yo was waiting for Henry and the others when they reached this warehouse. We couldn't understand how it happened until one of our people saw Cui Quan with two of Yo's men. They were acting extremely friendly, and money was passed to Quan.
Cui Quan? There is no mistake?
No mistake. It was only after this discovery that things became clearer. Quan had been acting a little strangely recently, disappearing often. No one thought too much of it until Quan was seen with Yo's people. We have been keeping watch on him ever since. He is behaving oddly.
Having second thoughts.
Or maybe nervous because he has been asked to stay with the group and offer them more information. Anna, he reacted when he heard you were coming back.
Remember what we talked about on the flight? That this guy might be waiting so he can turn you in? Maybe that's why he's nervous.
He won't get the chance.
We have to be careful. If we expose Quan too soon, he might not talk. He may be our only lead to where Yo is gone.
Maybe not. These people who work for Yo, you know them? Where they hang out?
Of course. Why?
If they work for Yo, they'll know where he is. Quan might not have been given that kind of information.
Anna, I think I like your friends.
Later, they parked across the narrow street from the video store, which had just closed for the night, along with the other businesses. The staff had already left. The continuing downpour had cleared the street.
The video store is one of Kim Yo's enterprises here in Hong Kong. Just one of his sidelines.
He doesn't make enough money from selling guns?
The store is nothing but a cover. Yo has a video pirating operation going on. He distributes his products across Asia, and it brings in a lot of money. Cam Leong and San Tung work out of here. They front for Yo in Hong Kong. Tung has rooms behind the store. Most nights he and Leong work late after the store is closed. That is Leong's black Porsche parked in the alley.
Business must be good. Do they have any backup?
Why would they need backup? They work for Yo, and he has official protection. Local criminals know better than to move against someone like Yo.
Being out of towners, we wouldn't know about that.
Lyons opened the rear door and stepped out, turning up the collar of his jacket. Blancanales followed. They were both armed with pistols Chan had provided. Chan's driver stayed in the car.
Lead the way, Tony.
The Able Team commandos followed Chan and May across the street and down the side alley. They skirted the Porsche, and Chan indicated a side gate. He pushed it open, and they moved into the dark rear yard. The back of the store had been extended. A concrete and brick structure that added another 20 feet onto the original building. The one window in the wall that faced them was shuttered, but some light showed through the overlapping slats. Chan led the way to the door. It was plain wood with a metal handle. He tried it. Locked.
Looks like we have to do it the hard way. When we get inside, let me handle it. Just translate anything I say and don't cut them any slack.
I don't understand any way but hard.
Hey, Carl, he's your kind of guy.
Lyons checked the feel of the door. He put his weight against it, pushing to see where the secure areas were, then stepped back. He drew the Sig Sauer P226 that Chan had given him, then launched himself at the door, hitting it hard with his left shoulder. Lyons went in, Chan and Blancanales close behind. May followed, quickly closing the door and staying close by it, her own pistol in her hands. The room was filled with banks of both VCRs and DVD copiers. Shelves were stacked with blank tapes and discs, with others holding already copied material. At one end was a desk and a couple of chairs. Ducted ceiling fans spun, pulling out the heat generated by the running machines. Just as Chan had predicted, they were only two men. As Lyons crashed into the room, they jerked up from what they were doing, surprise etched across their faces. They recovered quickly, one of them turning for the desk, reaching for the handgun he kept there. Lyons kept moving. He took long strides across the room and reached the man going for the gun. The Able Team leader caught a handful of the man's thick hair, yanking back and pulling the man to a dead stop. Still clutching the hair, he spun the man, swinging him across the room and into a bank of DVD machines. The impact knocked a number of the recorders off the shelf. They crashed to the floor, taking the Chinese with them. The other man, seeing the weapons trained on him, held his hands up in front of him, offering no resistance. Lon Canales used his own pistol to indicate he wanted the man to move aside. Lyons bent over the Chinese on his knees.
Who's this one?
That's Tong.
Lyons moved so he was standing to one side of Tong. As the man started to get up, Lyons launched a kick that drove into his ribs. Tong lurched across the floor, the big American following him and delivering another hard kick. The force drove Tong up against the desk. He was still attempting to steady himself when Lyons reached him. He caught hold of Tong's expensive silk shirt and hauled the man upright. As Tong's head came up, flushed with rage, the ABLE team leader backhanded him with the barrel of the SIG. Lyons picked up Tong's pistol off the desk and threw it to Chan. Bending over the figure, he dragged Tong upright, slamming him against the wall, then pushed the muzzle of the P226 into the man's throat.
Where has Yo taken our people? If you don't tell me what I want to hear, I'll shoot you in the knee.
Tong's eyes flicked to his tormentor's face. The look in the American's eyes told Tong he had no easy way out.
How do I know you won't shoot me anyway?
You don't, and I will.
Lyons moved his gun hand until the SIG was aimed at Tong's left knee.
No, wait! Yo took our people with him on a flight to see Sun Yang Ho. He had dealings with North Koreans on Carissa's behalf. All I know is that they flew to an island off the North Korean west coast. I don't know the location.
Why should I believe you?
Please, I do not want my kneecap shattered.
Why did Yo take our people all the way to this island?
When his business is done, he will fly on to deliver your team to Carissa himself.
Stony Man Farm, Virginia.
We need to locate that camp in Chechnya. If we want a chance at Carissa, it's possible that's where he is.
Can we get satellite time? Give us that, and we might have a chance.
Give me an hour, and I can get some SARS time. It's our best shot right now.
Hong Kong. Chan called in a car that had been waiting a couple of streets away. Kam Leong and San Tong were bundled into it and driven off. The other car followed. They were headed to a safe house where Quan would be. It was a 30-minute drive to the house. It was out of the city, in the hills, isolated. Chan told his contacts in the first car to wait a few minutes before bringing the prisoners inside. They went inside the safe house. The moment Mei appeared, she was greeted by the four Chinese in residence. Only one held back for a moment before he greeted her. Chan leaned in to Lyons and Lon Canales.
That is Quan.
I don't think he expected to see her so suddenly. He'll have a heart attack when he sees his buddies.
Yes, I believe he just might.
When San Tong and Kam Liang were brought into the room, Lyons saw the shock that crossed Quan's face. He looked like a man caught in a trap of his own making.
Nowhere to go, Quan. Now we have you all. Tell me, was it worth it? Did the money these two gave you take away your guilt?
Cui Quan looked around the room, seeing only hostility in the eyes of his former friends. He saw nothing when he looked at his confederates.
They can't help you. They have their own problems.
Anna, I know you have your own way to deal with these guys, but we're on a tight schedule.
If Yo still has weapons in his warehouse, we can't ignore them. Wherever they end up, the U.S. is going to be on the wrong end. They could go to the mainland to be used against the American public, or they might end up in Iraq, killing more U.S. military personnel. Either way, those weapons need to be neutralized.
You are right. The motto we have to deal with here is ours. It shouldn't interfere with your mission.
Allow me to arrange things. We can show you he doesn't have everything his own way.
New Territories docks. The rain, still sweeping in across the bay, had covered their approach. There was no junk used on this trip. A fast powerboat brought them in close to shore, Chan at the wheel. He knew the waters and the pattern used by infrequent patrol boats. There was a risk, and they all knew and accepted it. The possible price that might have to be paid if Yo's stored weapons were destined for anti-U.S. targets was more than either Lyons or Lon Canales was prepared to gamble with. Mei Anna, clad in black like the rest of them, kept watch as Chan negotiated his way between moored boats, working them closer to the dock where Henry Lee had taken Phoenix Force. He brought them to the same mooring, alongside the dredger, cutting the powerful motors. The powerboat drifted in alongside the dark bulk of the dredge.
The warehouse is the one directly in front of us.
We make this a simple in and out. Get inside, plant the charges, then leave. If we meet any opposition, we take them out with the minimum of fuss. Understand?
Yes.
Let's do it.
May's group had provided them with weapons and explosive charges from one of their caches. Lyons and Bluncanales had backpacks to carry their equipment. In addition to the handguns, they also had matte black Kalashnikovs. Chan led the way across the rain-lashed dock. By the time they reached the warehouse frontage, everyone was soaked.
This place alarmed?
Probably.
What's the likely response time?
On a night like this, I'd say at least half an hour. That's if everything is working. If not, there might not even be a response.
You guys like living on the edge. Door here.
Chan used a set of steel lockpicks, and it took him only a short time to free the lock. He eased the door open a little, then used his hand to explore the interior, his fingers seeking any alarm trips. Satisfied, he opened the door far enough so they could all slip inside. Chan closed the door behind them, and they crouched in the semi-darkness. While the others adjusted to the shadowed interior, Chan checked over the door as a precaution. He eventually found a broken contact.
Looks like we did trip some kind of alarm.
Then we'd better move. We'll do this faster if we split into pairs to locate what we came for and set charges. We can detonate with the remote. Check your watches. We get out of here in 10 minutes from now.
May and Chan took one backpack and moved off to one side of the warehouse. Lyons and Bluncanales went the other way. It was a long 10 minutes. Both teams had to locate and identify their targets, then set charges before moving on. The deeper they moved into the cavernous warehouse, the more the chance of discovery increased. If the alarm had been picked up, any interception seemed to be taking time to show up. That was Lyons' greatest concern. He didn't let it deter him from completing the exercise. If the hammer came down, they would handle it at the time. Until then, he and Bluncanales carried on laying their charges. They were nearing the end of the 10-minute period when they came across the bays of weapons Kim Yo had shown McCarter. The consignment was still to be sent out. They identified the weapons, rifles and rocket launchers, SA-18s and cartons of C-12. They placed their final charges.
We got any spare detonators?
Always bring a few spares. They opened a number of the C-12 packages and added the detonators.
Time to go.
They backtracked, reaching the door they had entered seconds before May and Chan returned.
Everything set?
All our charges set. Little red lights flashing.
We clear the dock before we detonate. If all the charges go, we should expect one hell of a bang.
Chan eased open the door. The hiss of the rain deadened any sound coming from outside. He slipped his assault rifle from his shoulder before he moved outside. May went next, with Bluncanales close behind. Lyons was the last to leave.
Damn! We've got company coming in, and I don't think it's to say welcome.
Use protection squad!
Lyons caught the bouncing beams of powerful flashlights cutting through the sheeting rain. Dark figures raced toward them across the dock.
Here we go!
Lyons brought up his AK-47, aiming at, then slightly above, the flashlight beams. He touched the trigger, feeling the rifle jerk against his side. One of the light beams jerked skyward as the man holding it went down, punched off his feet by the 7.62mm bullets. The others turned their weapons on the advancing crew, cutting a swath through the front rank. The Chinese were firing on the move, reducing their accuracy. Figures stumbled, hit the wet ground, light beams shooting in all directions.
Head for the boat! Get the damn thing fired up before we have the Red Chinese Army down here!
Chan, with Bluncanales on his heels, ducked and ran. Bluncanales laid down cover fire once they reached the edge of the dock, leaving Chan clear to go down the ladder and drop into the powerboat. May snapped in a fresh magazine.
Get to the dock, Anna!
The Chinese had scattered, their return fire sporadic as they sought to relocate themselves. Lyons maintained his bursts, pausing only when he had to reload. He used short, selective bursts, his aim accurate, taking down a number of the dark, hunched figures. Out of the corner of his eye, he saw May scuttle across the dock, then drop flat on the edge alongside Bluncanales. The pair set up covering fire for Lyons as he ran to join them. Below the dock, the powerboat's engine burst into life.
Let's go!
Move out!
Bluncanales and May went down the ladder. A number of the Chinese started across the dock, heading directly for Lyons' position. He pulled the remote from inside his jacket, extended the short antenna, and flicked the power switch. The indicator light flashed red. He pressed the button. Nothing happened immediately, and Lyons found he was holding his breath. Seconds slid by. Lyons looked at the remote in his hand. The red light held steady. Then he saw it flicker for a microsecond.
Son of a bitch! It was worth being here just to see that.
And worth coming back for. I just wish David had been here to see it.
Hose Island. Enciso, his head still down on his chest and a hand pressed over the bloody gash, remained leaning against a wooden crate.
Rafe, I'm okay.
MacArthur bent over him.
What are you up to? When I go down, see if you can get one of those Chinese over here. Hear me, Gary?
I heard. It's worth a try.
Enciso let himself slump to the floor.
Oh.
Manning knelt beside him, while MacArthur held out his bound hands and gestured at one of the Chinese.
Hey, give us a hand. Can't you see he's hurt?
The Chinese glanced at his companions.
What shall we do?
Go and look.
You hit him too hard, Key. You go look.
You're no help.
Key, ignoring the laughter from his companions, turned toward the three captives, his rifle pointed at them as he approached.
Please, help him.
Key used the muzzle of his rifle to push the Canadian to one side. He peered down at Enciso's prone figure. All he could see was the blood streaking the side of the Cuban's face.
He will not die from a little loss of blood.
MacArthur leaned in closer and clamped his right hand over the butt of the pistol in the holster strapped to Key's waist. He yanked the weapon free. As the stricken Chinese fell, Manning made a grab for the Kalashnikov, yanking it from Key's fingers. He clamped his fingers around the hand grip, jammed the stock against his side, and braced his arm against it. He turned the muzzle in the direction of the other Chinese and touched the trigger. The Kalashnikov began to jack out shots, the 7.62mm slugs spraying the area, scattering the Chinese before they could return fire. MacArthur had turned away from Key the moment he had triggered his first shot. Now the Briton faced around, the P-226 rising to track in on one of the moving guards. MacArthur was in a better position to use his handgun, and his next shot caught its target on the move, the 9mm slug punching through the side of the man's neck, opening a wound that began to pulse with blood. Enciso pushed aside the body sprawled across him. He got to his feet, checking out the area around them. The proliferation of packing cases would give them good cover in the first instance, at least allowing them sanctuary, even if it was only for a short time.
Move back!
Still firing the Kalashnikov, Manning moved to follow the Cuban. MacArthur wasn't far behind, dropping and rolling behind the cover as Yeo's guards began to return fire from their own protected areas. MacArthur measured his shots from the 15-round magazine.
Keep moving!
They edged back through the rows of crates toward the entrance. They were ignorant of how many, if any, armed personnel Ho had on call. The only people they had seen were Ho's two bodyguards and the workers packing the crates. The packers had scattered the moment the gunfire started, leaving open boxes and tools strewed across the floor. It was Enciso who spotted a pair of cutters one of the workers had dropped. He snatched them up, turning to MacArthur.
Hey, David!
MacArthur turned and saw what the Cuban was holding. He stuck out his bound wrists, and Enciso cut the plastic loop. Moving to Manning, Enciso freed his hands, then passed the cutters to the Canadian so he could be freed himself.
Now that feels better.
Manning, now able to manage the Kalashnikov correctly, began to lay down his shots with precision, keeping Yeo's two men from advancing. MacArthur kept watch while Enciso checked out some of the crates close by them. Peering into one after the other, he came across one containing fragmentation grenades and without hesitation picked a couple from the box. Pulling a pin, he hurled the grenade across the building. It landed just ahead of where Yeo's men were crouched. Armed with more grenades, the Phoenix Force trio moved across the building, laying down a trail of destruction that turned the interior into smoking chaos.
Look at that!
Enciso pointed to a cluster of weapons on a large flat metal pallet, roped down and ready to be moved. The recognition came quickly from Stony Man briefings on ordnance. It was a North Korean heavy machine gun, designated M1983, quad in 14.5mm. Normally mounted on a battle tank, this weapon had been fitted to a base capable of being fixed to a truck chassis. The four-barrel machine gun operated on a recoil basis and was belt-fed. A hefty weapon designed for use in rough terrain, it had a rate of fire that punched out around 600 rounds per minute from each barrel.
You think these are for Kariza?
Could be. Look around you. Grenades, rocket launchers, assault rifles, machine guns. All stuff he's going to need to make good his promise to make life difficult in Iraq. Let's face it, that bloke is serious. We know that already. Talking of rifles, take these.
The Cuban thrust Kalashnikovs into their hands. The weapons were already loaded. Enciso leaned into the crate he had discovered and pulled out one for himself. He handed MacArthur and Manning extra magazine, which they tucked behind their belts.
I want Yeo!
We should be making for that plane! Time we got the hell out of here!
Yeo first! And if you see that bloody Korean, sort him out as well!
Manning glanced across at Enciso, who merely shrugged. They ran in the direction of the office block. A hunched and bloody shape lay against the inner wall, the left arm torn from the shoulder. One of Ho's bodyguards. The other bodyguard was nowhere to be seen. Enciso spotted a dark figure emerging from the smoke.
David, on your right!
It was Ho.
Oh!
The lethal burst of fire slammed into Ho at waist level, shredding the wooden doorframe he was clinging to. Suddenly, Kim Yo burst from the shattered office block, firing a handgun wildly. The man crashed to the ground. By the time Phoenix team reached him, Yo was leaking copious amounts of blood from the half-dozen pulped wounds. While the others stood watch, McCarter knelt beside the dying Chinese.
It is painful.
I hope so.
Because I had Lee killed?
Bloody right.
We all make choices.
I choose to let you die right here, you bastard.
Yo turned his head for a moment as the sound of jet-powered aircraft took off and flew over the building.
Too late for you. I have at least fulfilled my contract with Carissa. The most important of the weapons I negotiated on his behalf have just left, and you failed to stop them.
The hell with you. Play your bloody games, Yo. We handled Carissa's other weapons. We'll do the same with whatever just left.
Yo struggled to stay coherent long enough to speak.
You have no idea where that pain is going, or the type of aircraft to look for. Time is not on your side. Carissa will have the cargo in his hands before you locate him. Too late to stop those three nuclear devices.
Yo's eyes glazed over, the spark extinguished.
Did I hear that right?
Yes. You heard it right. It sounds as if our friend Carissa has just gone nuclear.
Stony Man Gathering Storm is a Graphic Audio production. Stony Man, The Executioner, and Mac Bolan are trademarks owned by Harlequin Enterprises Limited, used by others under license. Copyright 2005, Worldwide Library, all rights reserved. Production copyright 2005, The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. Performed by Terrence Aselford, Nanette Savard, Thomas Penny, Richard Rowan, Jeff Baker, Christopher Graybill, Kate Torrey, and Mort Shelby. Additional red shirts by The Dead Giveaways. Adapted for graphic audio by Mort Shelby. Dialogue editing by Nathaniel Perry, Brian Rogers, and Christian Parent. Graphic audio sound design by Chris Rowan and Brian Rogers. Directed by Terrence Aselford. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. The Stony Man theme was composed by Mark Ashby. Additional original music by Chris Rowan. If you enjoyed Stony Man, be sure to look for Don Pendleton's Mac Bolan and Ryder Stacy's Doomsday Warrior, available at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloadable extras, forums, and podcasts. Keep listening for a preview of another Graphic Audio title.
The following preview is of a Graphic Audio production rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
America is facing its darkest hour after a successful nuclear strike on Buklo, Texas. The madman responsible, Iraqi Razan Carissa, is moving forward with his plan to detonate three more nuclear devices with the aid of contacts within Russia, China, North Korea, and the Middle East. The only thing that stands between the world and Carissa's nuclear holocaust are the men and women of the president's ultra-clandestine force, Stony Man. But they're going to get more than they bargained for when they suddenly find themselves battling on another front as well. A conspiracy to overthrow the U.S. government, arising out of the very ranks dedicated to defending and protecting the homeland, the United States military. Stony Man number 77, full blast.
The team is determined to find this bloody maniac and stop his clock one way or another. If you even suggest they back off, I don't like your chances. Now just come up with something we can work with. Isn't it time you reconsidered your position, General?
No, it's time you shut your goddamn mouth, Mr. President, because you're finished!
I see the MiG coming in from your side for the kill.
Let's see if he fancies a game of chicken. Make your play, Sunshine.
Oh, shit!
No man can resist torture forever. In the end, you will tell your most secret things. You will betray all your friends and your country because it will be the only way to end your suffering. If I ask, you will even betray your mother and offer me your wife just so it will stop.
We move fast and we move hard. I want the top men of the Joint Military Command secured in detention. Then we deploy and we stand fast. The president has moved out of office, and I make my national broadcast. Because goddammit, the American public wants something done.
Stony Man number 77, Full Blast, coming in December.
Of all the evils that have plagued Western civilization, perhaps the most pernicious was the Nazi scourge of the 1930s and 40s. But Hitler's twisted philosophy didn't die with him in that bunker in Berlin.
Do you call yourself a white man?
Not your kind.
My kind is all there is, as you will soon see.
Mack Bolan teams up with Mossad agent Jacob Geller to prevent a would-be Führer and his minions from starting World War III.
I want Gerhard Steuben and the warhead. Have you got that?
What? I don't know what you're...
Who else wants to die for the half-assed master race? I want your Führer and the warhead.
Madman Gerhard Steuben's promise of a glorious Aryan nation takes malignant root among the disaffected white supremacists of post-apartheid South Africa.
Get me Pretoria. Their president has 4 hours to live.
What has a gun?
Bolan must finally pursue Steuben to the end of the earth. Literally.
That Nazi bastard is going to explode a tactical nuclear device at the South Pole.
Not on my watch.
Mack Bolan number 80, A Dying Evil, coming in December 2005 in Graphic Audio.
If you can't find that hot Graphic Audio title you're looking for, just head to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD or MP3 disc format. Or, the fastest and cheapest way, download that puppy and play it on any of the many devices that'll play Windows Media. And if you're on the road or just a total computer feeb, snatch up the phone and call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net.